Accession number 30402, Mr. Ken Austin, Real 5. Now, before we go on, I think you wanted, because of what happened in Korea, it's quite important we establish it. You'd worked for the army in cinema, helping with the cinema at Barnard Castle. Can you tell us a bit about that? What that entailed?
Well, it's it's a matter of the regimental in Barnard Castle when I was in the St. Hussars. They had a cinema, so I used to being the sort of about the camp doing all maintenance and stuff. I used to look after different things like seats and that broken in the cinema. But at the same time, I got to know the projectionist and the sergeant who was in charge, and I used to go up and help him to do the film. So he taught me how to lace up films, how to show films, how to change from one reel to another, and all that type of stuff. But that came in handy when I went to Korea.
Right, so that's what made that. Now, anything else? Getting back, you were in Aldershot. You're helping on to putting the fences up for the Horse of the Year show. Anything else you were doing, more sort of preparations at Aldershot?
No. Aldershot was mainly getting your kit or whatever they were going to give you to go to Korea, because we wasn't there long enough. All we was waiting for the actual day to leave and get on the boat. So,
you didn't get any special uniform then?
No, you only got sort of bits that were left, because when we got to Korea, we found we didn't have the right stuff.
So what about the voyage out? What ship did you go on? What month was it you left?
Well, we was on the Georgic, and on that going out, I used to also, work the cinema on the boat of a night time, so that they could have evening films. And as we stopped at different places on the way to Korea, you should change the film and get another one to go on to the next stop.
And what films were there? Were these the popular?
Oh, these were all they were all sent by the Army Cinematic Society, whoever does it. So you ever got, whatever that was on issue that week or that time you was in the dock, you picked them up, you know.
Do you remember what was particularly popular?
Oh, no. There were so many different ones, you know.
Now, and did you show any army films, instructional films, or was it just entertainment?
No, it was just entertainment. What's it?
Now, what was the mess deck like? Where you lived on the Georgic, like? What were your conditions like?
Oh, I think there was about four in a cabin, like a sort of thing, up and down bunks either side. We wasn't on hammocks, we just had bunks, because I think it'd been refitted to be a troop ship.
But you were in cabins, not a mess deck, not a big open thing.
No, you had a big deck only for meals and stuff like that. But I used to do a lot of, I had a practice room to try the films out on the side, and I used to do a bit of musical with a couple of us. We used to go down in the fridge, down below, just to practice, guitar. I used to play the drums, another bloke played the guitar, and another bloke played the clarinet. So we used to have a little go together.
Well, what were you playing, jazz or?
Oh, whatever, on that time, that period sort of thing, I can't remember a lot of them.
Would you perform for the ship's company, or was it just practicing?
Oh, you can have a little go, like in the mess room or something, people singing up top, and have a little sing-song sort of thing. That's all we done it for,
Were you seasick at all?
Well, I wasn't seasick, but I was fairly ill, because you've got inoculations for going to Korea, right, and boosters and stuff. Well, I had mine, went down from the fridge, told to go up and have them up top. So I went up top and had mine, went straight back down to the fridge where we were practicing, down below. And the RSM come down and said, "You lads down here, had your inoculations?" "Yes, sir." "Yeah, show us your arms." So I showed him my arm, there wasn't a mark on them. "You haven't had them?" Marched me all the way back up again. And at that time, there was the changes of doctors and nurses. looked at me up, no, he hasn't, I'm trying to give me another lot. And I was quite bad, you know, that I came to in the hospital bit on the ship, because they'd overdone it, you know, I'd had too much of this stuff. But anyway, after...
What effect did it have on you? Did it just collapse or what?
Yeah, it really makes you sick, you know, especially if you have boosters as well at the same time. So you had two inoculations and two lots of boosters. And that's not very good for you, you know. But as a day, got me through anyway. A few days later, I was all right again, you know. But that was the only other trouble. Oh, I didn't have... It wasn't trouble. I was the guard commander one night, and the thing is, I had to make out the guard sheet of who was in the pokey and where I was. The thing was, I had a clue at sea where you was, you know. You've got to fill this form in, sort of thing. So, well, you're either at that camp or that. But anyway, I had to go up to the captain and ask him whereabouts we was during the hours of 10 o'clock at night to 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning. So he gave me some idea. You were latitude so-and-so. And that was written down. But that was the only bother we had on the boat, you know, ups and downs sort of things. But quite a good voyage, actually. Oh, until we got to the China Sea, and then we run into one of those big storms.
Did you have any stops on the way? I think you mentioned. Did you stop anywhere on the way? You know.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get ashore? Do you remember that at all?
Yeah, we were Aden, Colombo, Singapore. I think we had three. Well, you had to, because otherwise you wouldn't have enough water and stuff on with that amount of troops on there. You wouldn't have enough fresh water and stuff, food.
What did you think of these places? I mean, very foreign compared to England
very
or Germany.
Nice, very good.
To you, you know.
Yes, yeah, to me, yeah.
What did you do? I mean, just go. Go ashore or?
No, oh, yeah, you went ashore, wander around, have a look at the places, at meals on shore and stuff like that. Oh, yeah, it was quite good.
Now, where were you heading to? Oh, no, sorry, China Sea. You had a hurricane or?
Oh, in the China Sea, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, it was supposed to be the second biggest ship next to a Queen liner, and it was like a cork on a. A bath of water, badly splashed. One end of the ship was in the water and the other end was out. The props were right out of water. But, everybody felt really bad on that. I don't think anybody hit that day.
Did it do any damage to the ship?
No. Well, not as far as I know. I didn't pop over the side to have a look.
Now, where were you heading for? Busan or where were we going?
Well, it was Korea, Busan.
And what happened when you got to Korea? What month was it? What month did you set off and what month did you get there?
Well, it's near December, nearly Christmas time.
You got there, so you set off in November, yeah, I presume?
Yeah.
And this is 50...
Oh, 90, well, yeah. 1950
or 1951?
Yeah, 50-51.
And... So what happened when you got to Busan?
Well, we pulled up and the most fantastic greeting I've ever had. We docked at the side of the jetty and there was a big warehouse opposite. And I always remembered it. There were two massive great doors slid open and out came three young Korean children, two small ones and one big one, and they were pulling a barrow with the biggest bass drum I've ever seen on it, and the two little ones were pulling the barrow and the boy behind was carrying the bass drum sticks, and they marched right out the door up to a marking on the jetty. They stopped. Kid at the back with the two sticks stood up like that, boom, 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 boom. The doors opened again, and another big American Negro came out. He walked up to the drums again, took the sticks off the young boy, boom, 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 da 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 da, you heard in the background, boom, boom, da-da, and then they came out, this fantastic Negro band playing St. Louis Blues March. And how they marched out, all their helmets were silver, the little kids was all in little army, American army suits were silver. And it was really, well, the boat started to tilt because everybody that was that side all rushed over to this side to look down and see what was going on. And that was a real fantastic scene to see that this band come out of this warehouse, you know. And it was a fair-sized band. They were really big. Anyway, that was finished, and we all marched off. Oh, got off the boat, got all our kit. And we were told what to do. We're going to get a lorry. I was one of the first lot because I was going to go up to sign over the stuff with the officers and that at the front before the regiment actually all come up, so that you took over the tanks and stuff like that. So the 8th Hussars who was in front, the first ones, that they can come, that was Barry, and that come back. So on the way up, and no disrespect to the Korean people at the time, I thought I was going in the dark ages, going back in time. It was that weird because the way that the people were walking about with these sort of rickshaw things on their back, these A carriers and stuff, and their dress, and walking about, and I thought, you know, what's wrong? What have I come from another country, another part of the world or space to see this, the way there was no proper roads, you know, mostly tracks we went up. Anyway, eventually we get to the front, where we were supposed to go. I was in HQ.
Now this is, I think we've jumped, it's December 51 this is, isn't it? Because that's when you took over from Barry's, from the 8th Irish Hussars. Would that be right?
No, 1950.
Right, 1950.
Yeah, because I was 1950-51. Then I was in the Middle East from the end of 51 to 52 when I got devolved.
Right. Okay, right. In that case, Barry may have got it. There seems to be some sort of thing, because I thought that you took over from the 5th Inner Skullin. You were the 5th Inner Skullin Dragoon Guards, weren't you?
We took off over from the 8th Hussars. What time did Barry say he left?
December 51.
He left?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it must have been 51, 52 then.
Right. I think that would make more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, because
50 would be
very
early.
It was a time near the end of the year, so that's what made it seem a bit different, you know.
Because the other dates fitted, I think. But yeah, we'll check that. I'll put it in the catalogue, whichever it is. The years don't matter that much. It's all, you know. Now, so your initial impressions were it was a very poor, very poor country.
Well, I wouldn't say you thought it was very poor, but you thought that the people and the way they were, it was going back in time. You know what I mean? I mean, say, that could have been a very rich country, but still going back in time, you know. And then we got to the front.
Where did you go to? Was this up to the Koang Sang area, you know?
Up near the Imjin.
Near the Imjin, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how did you get to the front? You were with the advance party.
Well, they had lorries. They went up in lorries, you know, back to lorries.
And you didn't have any of your vehicles with you at the time?
No, not the actual vehicles.
Were you going to be in the Bren guns again or Bren guns?
No, Dingo armoured car.
You're back to them again?
Yeah.
Right. Well, but they weren't with you at that time?
No, they were with the 8th Hussars, and then we took over from
them. You were still reconnaissance troop, though?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
So what did you? So you're on this long, was it quite a long journey?
Well, it seemed it, because you didn't know distance there. You know, I might say, in a kind of where you are now, you know that so and so. But going on lorries that were up and down tracks and mountainside sort of thing, you didn't know how far you was or whether it was a long journey or what. You know, they got to be, you couldn't tear along in these lorries, sort of, let's say. There wasn't roads to really do that sort of thing, you know. So, we got there. Then the rest of the party, they all went to the their different tanks and different squadrons.
Now, which tank were they? They took over the tanks. What tanks did they take over?
Centurions.
And what state were they in? Were you aware of?
I couldn't say what state all the tanks was in, but they seemed to be all right because everybody said got in touch and said, they can start up, move, and Travis and get everything like that. And there was enough shells up stacked near each tank, so there was no rush to replenish them, you know.
So you took up, and what about your dinghos? What state were they in?
Well, that was in
a fifth. You hadn't had dinghos for a while, because you'd had dinghos, and then you'd had
brain carrier,
and now you're back to dinghos again. What state were they in? Were they all right?
Yeah, they seemed all right. I think we had six of them, and we had a big armoured car with a cannon on it. You know. So that was one of those. That was all right. I think the 8th Hussars had lost some. Been blown up or something, but those that were left were all right.
Now, so what happened then? Were you in a camp? Where were you actually based?
Well, we were based, because I was in HQ, Headquarters Squadron, that's back a bit behind the lines, going up on the front lines at that time. So what we did was get our tents, get our bedding and stuff that we needed, or to make, if we had to make bunkers, we had to dig them, make them. So
now, tell me how you made a bunker, because, you know.
Well, you dug them out, you know, like how many is going to stay, whether it's one or two people going to go in it. And then you cut trees.
So how big would that be?
Well, big enough for two people to lay flat. And just store your stuff. So you cut a fair size hole, and then you cut a bit with a shelf on it, you know, so that you could put your stuff, your mess kit, your feeding kit tins, and your change of clothing and stuff like that. And then you cut wood or whatever was there, metal, if there was any metal sheeting or stuff like that you could pick up from the Americans or something, put a top on it, put soil on it so they covered it in and left a little entrance on it.
Any heating in there?
Any
form of heating?
No.
I mean, could you, because some of them improvised stoves and things like that, you didn't have?
Not in the bunkers. When you came to, and you had tents, and then you had these diesel boilers in the middle of the tents, you know.
But this was dugouts at the time.
But the dugouts, there was nothing in there.
And where was this camp, the headquarters?
Well, I don't know where, I can't remember the exact place, but it was back behind the line somewhere.
Which side of the Imjin?
We was the South Korean side, not the North Korean side.
So, that was a dugout. What about, you were just setting up there, were you?
Just what?
Setting up a camp.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything else you had to do?
Yeah, we built a canteen, a sort of thing, a place to have our meals, all those back. We called it the Virgin. That was our place, and we built a little stage on it, you know, like for entertainment.
And what would you build them out of?
Whatever you could find. You know, bits of wood, bits of tin, straw, grass, straw, like you get straw in there, wheat, that, but you use the straw and stuff like that, pad deals, and the tables, and that was made up of whatever you could scrounge off the Americans, either some of their tables and stuff. You use your own initiative for whatever you could find about. You made it, and that's the only way to do it.
And what about the latrines? What were they like at the camp?
Well, we had a good bloke who used to dig them. There was it, you had to dig them and move it about, you know, wherever you were. RSM went charging because he used to go around like a busy bee after this bloke who used to be our digger. And one day he got so cheesed off the bloke who fit fit them up, keep getting chased by the RSM. And he fixed the floor one day, and he came round, went straight through into the street. So we had to get a 50-gallon drum, cut the top off, fill it up with water, and lower the RSM in it to wash it. I always remember that. But we got him clean, all right. And after that, he wasn't so keen running in at places that he didn't know. Looking, he was more cautious, as you might say.
Well, so they were just the latrines were all right. They weren't too bad.
Well, no, that was just typical army type of latrines that you build when you're about. You have to dig holes. You have to make the boxes and stuff like that. So that's all there was.
And was this a Korean, South Korean, or an army lad who did it?
No, well, the army blokes done it first when you first started getting there, you know. But gradually, they what the problem was, the Koreans, north and south, all looked the same. But you never knew which one was on your side or which one wasn't. So to be cautious, to make sure that you didn't get somebody in there to sabotage your tanks or stuff like that, all that was done by your own army people. It wasn't until later on that we got the Korean sort of, their FBI type of people, you know, who checked these people, and they would check them and say, well, okay, that bloke will help do that in the camp, or those women will do the laundry and stuff like in the river sort of thing. So until that happened, you had to do everything yourself, because that's what they call you a soldier for, a bloody idiot sort of thing, to do that. But I mean, say, after a while, once we got to know, we built a little canteen. I used to help to run the canteen, like go and get the beer and
tell me about that. So that was just part of your job, was it?
Well, it wasn't a part of nobody's job. But if you were the idiot that wanted to do it and start it, you'd done it, sort of thing, you know. But when I wasn't up the front, when I was back in HQ, I had time, once I checked all my dingo and everything was in running order and everything, guns and everything, then I had time to do other things. So we had people there, so I used to go down back to Busan and get the beer and stuff for the HQ, bring it up for the officers and also the men. We used to have the car, like, they used to get a lot of this stuff from American sweets and stuff like that. So we used to sell that, maybe razors and stuff like this. So you had a little canteen place made. So gradually, when I wasn't always there, there was a Korean chap asked to work with us, and I found out that he was such a nice old man. He was a mayor of one of the little villages back, but he was a really nice bloke, and he really looked after the place, you know, until we've had a couple of mishaps, sort of thing. Bloke was on doing it, and I wasn't, and he started selling spirits and stuff to Canadian troops, which was a dry army, and they're not supposed to. And they started shooting up their 45 guns and all this, half drunk, at these caravans sort of thing. But on these caravans was a load of entertainers, chorus girls. And all of that started to scream and run about. And then we had the military police down, all that, why they had this, been sold this liquor and all this caper and all that. But that was the only main mishap we had through the canteen. But that bit was when I was back in camp.
Well, we'll do that. What about food? What food would you get when you're back in camp? What was the food?
Oh. Turkey. That's all it was from America. Big boxes and cases of turkey and chip, potatoes, turkey and some vegetables, you know. But you had some sort of cereal stuff for breakfast, or maybe loads of egg, eggs and that for bait, breakfast sort of thing, you know. Done your own toast and all that caper on the burners that you had. But, I mean, say the equipment was sort of pepped up a bit by adding stuff that the Americans supplied as well as the British. And that was that, you know. The food was quite good, but it came to a stage when blokes used to say, oh, for a nice piece of corned beef or something like that, you know, or a bit of Spam.
Now, what about, so how would you spend your day when you were out of the line, you know?
Well, doing all these other things, you know. If we had ants of people come down, like from England shows, you have to make arrangements for them. You have to, if they're going to put a show on, you, they need stuff on the stage or maybe a bit of fancy work done. If you've got the equipment to do it, you've done it for them.
What sort of show would the ants put on? Would it be people you'd heard of?
Well, the first one I got tangled up in was we had I Hazel. I don't know if you ever know I Hazel. Well, she had the longest legs in show business. She was quite a nice girl. And I was on the side of the stage working the lights or what bits we had, and everybody's in there. And I'm standing there like that, holding the side of the wing. And she started off with this really sexy song. And all of a sudden, she came over, grabbed me, took me out on the stage, and I reckon she wrapped her legs in every position you can think of around me, you know, and singing this plumbing set. Well, you can imagine all the blokes going, whoa, oh, you know, all that caper. But anyway, she was quite a good girl, you know. Then there was Ted Ray, but he was a bit of a, well, they had a show, and they had this very, very thin, skinny opera woman that you would never look at a second time if you met her in the streets. She's come on the stage to sing these opera songs. Well, all the blokes, not only our blokes, Americans and so on, giving the old, whoa, lovely, you know. Well, anyway, Ted Ray come back out on the stage, stopped the show, called them all a load of ignorant so-and-sos and all this caper, took her off, and that was the end of it. So next day, I had to take him to another. So I got one of our 15-hour underweight vehicles out, and I said, I'll take him because I was back in the line. So I'll take him up to this other place. So it was in the afternoon, hot summer afternoon. On the way up, we took it as normal things. The Koreans at work and do the roads, it's siesta time, they're all laying along the road asleep, you know, over the lay down. So I drops him off, comes back, that was him up. So he was going to make arrangements for the next show. So I had to come back and load up with these girls, chorus girls. And it's open top. Now you have to go down, high up, down onto the engine when the river's no, then onto the pontoon bridge and up the other side. Well, when it was hot, sunny afternoon, every American, Canadian, Polish, whatever you like, was down there, and they was all swimming in the nude. Well, I got all these girls on, and I thought, no, I hope they're not near the bridge. I was praying to myself, I hope they're not near the bridge. Anyway, the time I started to come down, one of the girls looked out and said, oh, look at this, look. And then all the girls looking, I said, there's all these blokes running around with no clothes. Well, they see me coming down with these girls on. Well, that was it. It sort of cleared the river either side, and there was a multitude of human men standing on the side of the bridge. And I got a job. One of those things they shouted out. I couldn't believe it. In fact, these girls killed themselves a laugh. And I really, really enjoyed it. Anyway, I got through and I took them up the other place and dropped them off. So came back, and that was that, love. But then a little while later, about a month or so later,